Ladies and gentlemen, this is Das Hobby, Germany's number one trading card show. And here are your hosts with the perfect podcast faces, Marcus and Dennis.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Das Hobby time again. Another international guest, international podcast this week. But first, of course, I'm going to introduce my co-host, Marcus. How are you doing over there?
I'm good. Today again, English episode. Once again, sorry to our listeners and especially also sorry to our guest. And of course, also sorry, Dennis, for my bad English, but I try my best. I give everything because we have the card father himself in our podcast.
Yes, it is. It's long overdue. We're over 90 episodes in, and now we finally have our wonderful guest here. It is Rob from Bourbon Sports Cards. Hello, sir.
Oh, to be number 93 feels so good.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? Wasn't that one of the best Chicago Bulls difficult championships ever in 93?
Yeah. You know, it's really good to be here. Thanks so much for having us on. Looking forward to telling a story and getting some of your takes as well.
That's wonderful. So usually we start with one simple question to all of our guests. So how did you get into the hobby? What's your story?
My origin story is quite humble, actually. Started collecting cards around 1974 at the age of 8. Worked in a coin. I collected coins and stamps as a kid. That was my big thing. And I'd go to a coin and stamp shop all the time. And the owner comes at me one day and says, "How would you like to make some money?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I mean, $2 an allowance a week wasn't a whole lot." He asked if I wanted to deliver flyers. And it was 2 cents a house and 1 cent a car. And so he'd give me a big stack of flyers. I'd go back to the house, fold them up, get on my bike and go to the biggest parking lots I could find and the biggest apartment complexes I could find and deliver flyers. And that worked out well, got some extra money. And then he asked if I wanted to work behind the counter. And this is around 1979. And, you know, I asked the parents, they said, "That's great. It's the best education I could have ever gotten." And worked there for about 10 years. And then my father and I bought the business in 1989. And I ran it. I was 22 years old. So I'm kind of a lifer. Have owned the business for 34 years.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's incredible.
I check your website. So you, because there was written the store for stamps and collectibles, I think it was the first one, right? Is it right?
Yeah, we've had 4 locations. The first one, I kept the coins and I kept the stamps. And he had comic books. He was kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. And over the course of time, I eliminated everything but U.S. coins. And then in 1995, I finally gave that up as well to be strictly sports cards and to be the master of one. And we've scaled it up until this year now, and it's worked out okay.
Crazy. Okay. Give me the definition of okay, please.
Okay is we're doing okay. You know, it's a great livelihood. It's a lot of fun. And my father's still with us, still working. Nice. He's 81. He'll be 82 soon. He'll run circles around any of you, I assure you. He really enjoys it. And I have my son working with me now the last 5, 6, 7 years. And he basically runs the business. So success is basically having the family involved, putting something together that my son can build on for decades to come, and hopefully it continues, you know, down the path. So success really to me is being happy, being able to have some sort of living and making a lot of people across the world happy by supplying sports cards.
Yes, that's really a wonderful story. So 3 generations of coins and cards and comics and all of that, that's really wonderful. And as you said, like, I think for us over here in Europe, especially in Germany, your store is like, I think a lot of those guys know Burbank only because of your store. They don't know what else is going on there. So do you have a lot of, like, Europeans? Do they say hi? Like, "I'm from Europe, I'm from Germany," whatever?
All the time.
Yeah.
every week. We are a destination store, I like to think. We are kind of a bucket list store.
Yeah.
We're different. There's no shop like ours. And we get people that will fly in, and before they go to the hotel, they come to our shop first. And this is from everywhere. It floors me. We'll have a store full of like 25 to 40 people. I'll walk out there and you can almost be assured that one is international, which is absolutely crazy. And it's exciting because they're bringing that excitement. They're telling me about the card scene where they're at. And I'm learning. I didn't know there was a big card scene in Guam. And someone from Guam set up at our show and had an amazing inventory. And it's like, I think that a lot of people would really be surprised just how vibrant the hobby is in different parts of the world that you might not have expected. And here we are, you know, on a German podcast that, you know, is quite successful and has quite the following. And, you know, we're hearing, you know, with Paris and with Germany and with England, you know, just how big these communities are.
Yes. Crazy. Can you, for them that maybe not know your shop, or that's not so much, but for them, you said there's no store like your store. Can you a bit highlight or explain what's in your store and what's sure. make it so special?
We've got 41 showcases that are pretty amazing. They rotate constantly. We got value boxes of slabs, maybe about 15 of those that range from $3 to $45. We've got alphabetical singles sections by player at $1 a card. We have an amazing array of unopened product. Our showcases are all set up in a way where it's really easy to figure out what's in each of them. There's signage on each of those. The big thing with us that separates us besides our inventory is our liquidity, as our buying. And we have three buyers that are pretty much working on buying from customers all day long. Mm-hmm. You'll walk in the store as a seller. You'll put your name on a list. You might be 13th on the list a half hour in. If you follow my Instagram, you'll kind of see. Mm. We'll shoot videos and it could be 11:45 on a Tuesday and there's 30 people in the store. And there might be 12 people that are looking to sell. You can't walk into card shops and expect that owner or that staffing to be able to sit there and go through your things, put a number on it. We're a big believer in liquidity. And that's what's not, I think that that's a real issue in the industry. It's not talked about. Everyone talks about breaking and just selling things, but in a collectible two-way market, it's critical that we have people that can consume the cards back and not just do that, but process them and get them into a storefront in an organized manner where people will come in and be able to buy things. One of the things that makes us really, really good is that we have new arrival showcases where literally things are bought, things are processed. We go on Instagram, we'll run a 60-second reel that shows off 50 to 60 fresh cards that are going into this showcase, and you know exactly which showcase it is, and it rotates constant. And that creates a stickiness with the customer that I think is kind of unique to our shop. Where you were in the shop yesterday, but you saw these five reels that happened, and you're like, I need to go back. I want those cards. And you had no plans on going back that following day, but we've created this urgency with our customers, and that happens by being a buyer. And not enough shops do it. So I think that's critical. That's one of our biggest attributes.
Yeah. Yeah, this. I can agree. I see your Instagram. I think you are all day. You see every time when I see your stories, every time I have the need to be there because you see there's always action and you see the people are happy and showing their cards, and I like this atmosphere which you bring through Instagram. But in real life, it would be much better, greater. Yeah.
It's very relatable. Yeah. You guys are like, it feels like your doors are always open to everyone and everybody's welcome. That it really comes across like even through social media. I think that's unique.
It's community. There's too many grumpy dealers. I'm like, dude, you have the best job in the world. You're playing with sports cards. You just treat each customer the way you want to be treated. You set your store up the way you'd want to walk into a shop. There has to be a two-way. It can't just be buy product, mark it up percentage and sell it. that can't be your only attribute, especially in the day and age of fanatics that are coming in that want to be able to do everything across the spectrum. Mm. You need to be really good at doing things that they can't or don't want to do. Mm. And we've built this store to be card show proof, eBay proof, Amazon proof, local shop proof. And that's, I believe, our biggest competitive advantage. Most shops compete heavily with other things. We don't believe we have to, just because of the environment that we create and that, you know, our success is dictated by us, not someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You also organize trade nights in your shop, right? And then,
you know, the funny thing is you mentioned the trade nights, and we did. They got too big for the store. It's kind of scary just having that many people in the shop and that many people spilling into the parking lot. But I do have the biggest trade nights on the West Coast. They're part of our card show. I just don't feel comfortable with that many people in the store. We did three or four of them, and they were just crazy.
Okay.
And we decided that it's just not possible to do them anymore in the shop. But there's three trade nights at our card show, and we do two card shows a year. So basically we have six trade nights that are very large. But we had to take those to the show, not in the shop.
And what's the first card show you guys did?
We did one last August, late August, and it was in Burbank, which I wanted. It's the Burbank card show. So we picked the biggest space and about a 25-mile circumference. And it happened to be in Burbank, right across from the Burbank airport. So it was like this perfect location, 5 minutes from our shop. It's a big space, in my opinion. Seeing it empty, touring it, I'm like, this is amazing. It's a convention center right next to a great hotel. You literally walk off the plane, you take a 5-minute walk, and you're at the hotel. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be, you know, you're scared. You don't know who's showing up. We had lines around the building the whole time. It was crazy. Fire marshal wasn't pleased. had no idea there'd be that kind of demand for it. I felt awful because people waited an hour and a half to get into this thing. So we realized we needed a bigger boat. So we went looking around. The problem with card shows is you're very reliant on the convention centers. You can't pick your dates. They pick them for you. Okay. And a lot of times they're booked for months and months out. The first show was booked 8 months out. That was the earliest we could get it. Mm. And we just took the weekend. And so we're shopping around and nothing is available. Nothing. Mm. But we put our names in to see if anything opens up. And one opened up in Ontario, which is a city that not a lot of people know. Even in Southern California, it's kind of an afterthought. But I went and toured the facility at 70,000 feet. So that's a really big space for a second card show. And I was nervous. I'm like, we're not going to fill this. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, we filled it and then some. And people were saying it was the best show they've ever been to. Nice. Or the dealers were saying we've never sold more cards than we did at this show. And it really made me feel good. And then we kind of got in touch with bigger facilities, just kind of getting the lay of the land, the costs, the availabilities. And we reached to Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Which was the home of the National back in the day and the biggest crowds. And we knew we weren't there yet to go there, but we were just curious. And they told us the rates, that nothing available. Then they get back to us. We have an opening. We need to know if you guys are interested. So, you know, because it's going to go quick. And we're looking at each other and we're like, are we ready to make that step? Way more expensive. And we just said, you know, F it. We're going to do it. So we booked 100,000 square feet there. And then it's a two-story building. And okay. It's new. It's beautiful. And then they said, Rob, the people down below backed out. Need to know right away. You would have the whole building. And it's 200,000 feet. And I looked at my guys and said, no. I'm like, dude, I'm stressed over 100,000 feet. and they're like, Rob, dude, this opportunity. I'm like, dude, I don't want to bite off more than we can chew. It's all been good. It's been organic. And I'm like, I'm asking some different people. They're like, Rob, no matter how big you do it, it's going to fill. And I'm like, okay. So I okayed it. And with my two partners, and it's going to be 200,000 square feet. And it's Labor Day weekend, which you might not be familiar with there, but it's August 31st to September 3rd. Mm-hmm. Disneyland, there's a patio on the upper level that overlooks Disneyland. It's literally across the street. Mm-hmm. So we believe it's the best location that it can be in. We believe it's the nicest facility that a card show has ever been in the States anyways. And we believe that Southern California is the best market in the country. And I think it's close. So I think we have a lot of good drivers going on for the show. And I've got two partners, EJ and Jay, that both run smaller shows in Southern California. So they know the nuts and bolts. Okay. I don't want to know. I don't care. I'm the brand. I'm the face. And I have enough going on. So they do the heavy lifting. I kind of get the credit. So I like that.
Wonderful. Smart man.
Oh yeah. My wife will totally agree with that.
But it's interesting. Like in Germany, like we never had bigger shows since like 1 or 2 years ago. But here, the people are not looking for the convention centers. They look for more sophisticated areas. Like, for example, there was one in a soccer stadium, in the VIP area of a soccer stadium. They had a card show. There's one card show next week at Hockenheimring at the Formula One course. So they take these kind of locations to get out of the classic convention center.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you grow people. That's how you get these sports fans to become sports card collectors.
Yeah.
And that's critical. I think Fanatics is doing that in a big kind of way here. But by bringing the hobby somewhere where they might not know about the hobby, and it's a marketing thing for the industry. So I think that's brilliant. I mean, when you do a card show, you're kind of preaching to the choir. When you do an event like that, you're preaching to people that you hope to convert to the choir. So I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, because like in Germany, you have the quote unquote problem that we don't have that history with trading cards. Like the baseball, for example, it's not a big sport over here. This is so football, soccer driven. And people were collecting stickers back in the day. See, Panini printed a lot of stickers, and they collected this. So there's a lot more education going on over here.
Yeah, and that's hard. And I think we had the same problem back in 2020. Very similar, where there's a lot of people coming into the industry with very little education. Yeah. And the problem was they're being educated by people with ulterior motives. And whoever was screaming the loudest on Instagram or whoever had the most followers had a lot of sway. Onto these people that really didn't know the hobby, maybe collected when they were kids, but certainly didn't know the modern hobby. So I think it's big that there's influencers out there that actually influence in a positive way, instead of just having, selfish motivations for it. And it's good to hear that in Germany, it seems like the education that's taking place there is organic and real, and maybe not, the Gary V's of the world and these guys that jump in that really don't know anything, but know that they can manipulate their following. So I find that critical.
True.
Yeah. Back to also to your card show. And I also in Germany, you of course, you all know that you have every week somewhere a card show. Of course, in Germany, the most of them know the National. But as I told you, now everyone see the Burbank. It's beside the National, I think, the biggest card show since last year. So it's crazy how great you work this show.
It's appreciated. It's like people are calling us the West Coast National, and that doesn't interest me. I just believe that our show is kind of an extension of our brand. Mm-hmm. And to be something totally different. The National's been around 43 years. It's a juggernaut. It's amazing. It's far more than just a card show. We like to keep the focus on the cards. And the only reason I did it, because again, I've owned the business for 34 years and I never had any interest or inkling that I would ever be involved in a card show. But during COVID, and as we were getting out of COVID, the only real show going on in the country was in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I was seeing all my customers get on a plane and rent hotels to go to Dallas, which has never really been a hobby hotspot. It was just because Texas was open more so than to the country during COVID. And I'm seeing $800 from each person evaporate from the industry. It all went to airlines and hotels.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm in the biggest market in the country. And I'm like, why is everybody having to go elsewhere for a major card show? And so I talked to the guys that ran the smaller shows, and I told them I'm interested in doing a show, but I don't want to do a show. And they understood that that meant I want to have a show that I don't have to do a lot of work with, but I'll provide you guys the brand and the platform and the ability to reach out to certain people in the industry that you can't. And that's where it came from. I never planned on being in Anaheim for the third card show, which is ridiculous, but that speaks a lot to the fact of our location being in Southern California. These people are hungry for these shows. And again, it's an extension of our brand that we really work hard to craft, that we're very real and genuine and do it for the hobby. And it's not about the money. Most things I do really aren't. I'm not really motivated by it as much as most. I know that it'll come if you do the right thing. And that's the same with the card show. It means a lot when people have that kind of opinion, you know, of our store and of this card show that's really new, and that we can compete with shows that have been around for a very long time, and that after two shows we have that kind of reputation. So it means a lot.
That's nice. I totally agree with you. I think people they have a certain kind of bullshit detector, like when they meet somebody in person, if this is a real person or not. They maybe don't have it on social media, but when they step into a room they have it. And I think with you, people see the realness of the love for the sports card.
Yeah, it's a passion. I mean, this is the only job I've ever had. You know, you get the keyboard warriors that just like to hate, you know, and it's just, I wish I knew who they were physically, but I'll never know who they are physically. but it's, we don't have bad interactions here, like ever, you know, it's just the vibe is right. And just, you know, we buy, we sell, we interact with people. We're not just sitting down waiting for them to come to us. We're just happy to be doing what we're doing. We're kind of blessed, you know, and I said that before, it's a blessing to do what you love. And if you can marry sports and finance and, family, you're doing okay.
Amazing. That's wonderful.
Like us, Marcos. I had the question, what did you like most in the hobby? But you already answered this. That's really what it's. You said the key points and the values, which that's also the reason why in the hobby. And we have the card show next weekend, and I'm looking forward, of course, because of the cards, to talk with the people and have this great experience in the card show as well. So I like this.
You know, I have a lot of positivity. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see a hashtag 2023 like every single time. Give me one second. I just got to open a door. 1 minute. 1 second.
Of course.
Just grab what you want. Okay, I'm back. Yes. That was quick. but yeah, fine. Hashtag 2023 every single time. It's, you know, the biggest year we've had. It's the best store traffic we've ever seen, and people are like, well, the hobby's this and it's dipped and all these other things, and I'm like, the engagement here is absolutely amazing, the amount of new people coming in and the excitement of Fanatics, and people have all kinds of different opinions about them basically buying the industry and whether it's healthy or not, whether them selling direct to the consumer is healthy, how it affects card shops. And me personally, I think it's the best thing that could have happened to the industry, because it could have been some hedge fund that came in and basically, like Wall Street, just kind of sell it for parts and just be in it for the money. They talk about 10x the customer base, which is bold. I'm not sure if that's doable, but they've bought the business for 20 years. So maybe it is. But their marketing muscle, their ability, like we talked about with your shows, to turn sports fans into sports card collectors, is huge. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another point of the growth of the hobby that's going to come. And we had Michael Rubin in the store, and I don't know if you were familiar what happened, where he was walking around. He was there for about 90 minutes. We were talking about the industry, the business, and we had a nice full store, a lot of kids, and he walks up to a girl and she's going through Devin Booker cards.
Yes, I saw that. Wonderful. Yeah, sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, It's amazing. And so he starts talking to her. Do you collect Devin Booker? She's like, it's my favorite player. And he gets on his phone and she's looking at him kind of curious, like, what's up? She doesn't know who he is. And he FaceTimes Devin Booker and he answers and they start talking and he's giving him crap because the Suns beat his 76ers. And all of a sudden he points the phone towards Maddie and Devin Booker's talking to Maddie. And she's like 12 years old and there's just tears of joy streaming. And she's telling him how big a fan and how her parents take them to the Suns games. And they talk for a little bit. And it was such an amazing thing. And it was like a 60-second commercial that if we put all of our best minds to work in the industry to come up with a 60-second spot, it wouldn't be as good as what we saw with that. And she ended up getting a jersey signed. Then Michael flew her out to Phoenix with her family to meet Devin in person. And I'm like, if this guy can just create a memory just by whipping out his phone like that. And it was on ESPN. It was on SportsCenter.
Yep.
And it was everywhere online. And that just got me thinking. I'm like, this is absolutely amazing. And this is the power of Fanatics, where they don't have to have a commercial on ESPN. They can do something that ends up on ESPN. And there's a big difference between them paying for it and it organically belonging there. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's really exciting. And I think the future is bright.
Yeah.
And every time they create a new collector from a sports card fan, that impacts me because my job is to make sure once they're in the hobby, the Burbank brand gets in front of them. And they make this a destination store when they're coming to Southern California. So that really works.
Yeah, I saw the video too. I also saw it's just amazing. And I think those moments where these kids or whoever meets the athletes like as a surprise, those are military homecomings and these things for me are always like my always like oh.
I was there and I ain't gonna lie, there was some moistness up there. I thought it was absolutely amazing. And they talk about 10xing the hobby. And if that's to be possible, they bought the business for 20 years. So there's going to be a 3 to 5x anyways, just over that time span and the popularity of our hobby. But the focus on kids that I'm hearing from their higher ups, that's how you get it. You get them young. You keep it away from the gambling aspect, but you keep it in the collecting aspect. You get mom on board, which is the most important part of the equation. She's the one that spends the 90 minutes when they go to the card shop. She's the one that holds the purse strings and she's the one in the social environment that tells all of her friends that her son is really into this. It's really healthy. And then all of a sudden we have another generation that those kids grow up with something that they can pass on and they can enjoy it with their kids. But we got to do it the right way. And it's not by, overinflated pricing and influencers doing things that aren't in the hobby's best interest, but it's organic. And that's critical. And I think Fanatics is on board with that in a big way.
Nice.
Great. Good feeling. When you have that feeling, then it feels much better than also for us here. Yeah, I mentioned before you or I welcome you as a card father. I think can you give us a bit insight about how that name comes up to you?
It's kind of funny, actually. It was like 10, 12 years ago, I'd be on message boards, which I have no time for at all anymore. And my handle was just the card father. I thought it was just a great play on words. And in 2020, our store was shut down for 10 weeks, like everything else, And I didn't know that you could even post videos and put them on Instagram, just being an old Facebook guy. And I used to do seminars and travel the country and write columns for the biggest hobby publications, educational, and I saw there was very little education out there. There was a lot of misinformation and kind of, at my age, just kind of being in a kind of like a father to a lot of these people that were coming in that were in their 20s and 30s. and just kind of brought back the card father thing, and it really became a thing and it really stuck. And I think it's just because of the advice, you know, that I give, and hopefully it's positive and it's, you know, something that grows the hobby. And everybody just knows me as the card father now. And I really enjoy it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's just kind of neat. It's like kind of, it's not an alter ego per se, but I think it's a sign of respect in a way that, it's not like I just called myself that without having the credentials to back it up. And, you know, hopefully, you know, that name, when you hear it, you hear the Burbank brand, you think of about it positively. And, that I'm in here 3 hours before we open just to make sure that our experience here at the shop, you know, is worthy of the accolades that we seem to get.
But that's what a Cardfather does. That's what a Cardfather does. So one final question. So what does the Cardfather collect himself? What's your personal collection? Are you still? Geez.
Oh yeah. Okay.
okay.
Let's
Uh-oh.
See here.
Uh-oh.
I think you could see. All right. This is bad. I'm going to admit. Tell me if you can see what we're looking at.
Yeah.
You see the name?
Jake Pole. Rusty.
You start seeing the names out loud. Okay. This is my private collection.
Pete LeCocq, okay.
It's just me being silly and basically still being a 12-year-old at heart.
Okay.
This is Dick my Feld. Personal collection. Yeah. And it's just funny. And it never fails to make me laugh. And I think that's it. It's not built on value. Mm-hmm. When and if I ever retire, which is doubtful, or when and if I cut back the hours to less than 60 hours a week, I'd love to just collect. Mm-hmm. I'd love to create a bookshelf and have binders and complete sets, just build a 54 top set and just enjoy the process of it. I'm a card dork and I love cards. It's never gotten old, and every single card we buy goes through me. And people are floored by that. But in order for this machine of our eBay store with over 2 million different listings and the organizational aspects of this shop that make it unique, I've got a supercomputer up here that I don't think can be replicated just from years of institutional knowledge of handling these cards time and time again. And I really enjoy that. And I don't think I'll ever step away from this place unless the wife just completely puts her foot down. Just because I like it. It's just something that's in my DNA. And so that's my silly little collection. But if I ever really had the time, I would build a hell of a collection and enjoy it. And not just build it for financial, but the stuff doesn't have to be PSA 8s. They can just be, sometimes the cards are actually more interest to me when they're beat up, when they've been loved, they've been cherished, they've been played with, which is what they're supposed to be back in the day. And I think sometimes that has more value than someone just putting it away, encapsulating it. I'm kind of like, if I still had my childhood collection from the 70s, I know what they would look like. They wouldn't be mints. I was a kid. I played with them. Yeah. So, you know, I'm always that tuba player in the band that goes the wrong way. When they're out on the field, my opinions are usually 180 degrees different than what you're going to hear talking to most people. I was on a podcast right before this, and they're like, that's an interesting answer. That's an interesting answer. We don't usually hear that. But then again, you've never been in a store like mine or done online business like me or have been around as long as I have. So you see things differently. And hopefully what I see is what the customer wants.
Mm. Great. Yeah. One, because I see all the boxes behind you, and you told how much you have in your store, and I think you mentioned some parts already of that, but can you give a tip how you could organize best your cards? Because when someone could tell this, I think it's you about this.
Yeah. And it's years of fine tuning and eliminating steps, because once you can eliminate a step, that saves a lot of time and money. The short answer is okay. All right. So Marcus, you're coming in my store and you've got a carload of stuff, triple shoes, just God knows what. So now I'm going to take those cards and I'm going to process them and I'm going to sell them to someone in Oklahoma. Uh-huh. But what happened? Between what's going on behind the scenes. So the first things first, I believe that there's 13 steps to this and you can't eliminate any of them. And you're like, 13 steps, that's crazy. But they're all necessary for me to get that card to Oklahoma's mailbox. I got to break it by sport, correct? Mm-hmm. I have to break it within that sport to year. Mm-hmm. I have to break it down to brand. I need to break it down to subset. I have to put that subset in number order. I need to scan that card. I need to map the front image to a database. I have to map the back image to a database. I have to price it. I have to intersort that card into SOG. I need to price that card. I need to pull that card when ordered. I need to ship that card. And I need to provide any kind of customer service on the back end if necessary. Mm-hmm. So for me to buy your random card that you walk in with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 steps, if you include the customer service part of it, mm-hmm. that's what, and you need to have the cleanest, most streamlined organizations. I built my e-commerce operation, believe this or not, around my mother. When she was around, she worked with me. And back then there was no internet. It wasn't even fax machines. It was, I'm looking for this over the phone. They call and we built a physical infrastructure that it's so easy your mother can find it. And basically everything was color coded by sport. Everything in the store was like a physical database with the organization where someone would call up in 1997 and say, I'm looking for a baseball fireworks, Garrett Anderson, number 6. And nobody can answer that question over the phone. But we were able to because she knew exactly when the store, where 97 baseball was, alphabetically where Pacific was, alphabetically where the fireworks inserts were, and numerically where number 6 was. Mm-hmm. And being able to do that early on set the stage for us to be able to scale that when the internet became a thing, when databases became a thing, and that everybody else was kind of disorganized and such. And they were at a huge competitive disadvantage where we were able to get our inventory databased and online much faster than everybody else. Built with the physical infrastructure, we had a physical eBay store. And we still do here to this day. But organization is key. And having those steps in place and those employees that I got guys that know how to scan that have no idea about anything else. But when they get the cards, they're organized in the right way where they can image those cards quickly. Mm. Got guys that pull cards that could not identify a card to save their lives. My guys that ID cards would have no idea how to ship them. And that you don't need to know all those things. You just need to be really good at what you do. Mm. And so we try to set people up in a way that they can succeed. And otherwise, it's funny because a lot of these young guys, their only ability is how to comp a card. But if you put like a collection in front of them, their head would spin. They wouldn't know what to do. They can't go to card letter or alt or, look up a completed sale for 800 different things. It's just something that's built around institutional knowledge and my team's ability to look at things because I've seen them over and over again across decades. To ID things quickly. And people talk about artificial intelligence and all these new apps changing things. And they're nowhere close yet to the human brain that has processed these cards for years. They're trying. They keep telling me they're there and I keep proving them wrong. So we'll see. They got a ways to go. We're dealing with one company, super smart people. They tell me that 94% of the cards they can identify. And every time we do a test subject of 30 cards, it gets like 10 right. And it's just not there yet. You can't replicate the knowledge of being doing this for a long time. Yeah. And it's still off. So technology is wonderful, but it doesn't solve all problems.
That's a very smart end statement. That's it. That's knowledge, guys. Thank you. Really, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, and hope to see you guys out in Burbank. the card show, whether it's this time around, another time, you're making your way to the States, make sure you get to Southern California, give you the complete tour, and hopefully you'll have me back.
Yes. Thank you so much, sir. We really appreciate it, and good luck to you guys over there. Thank you to your father. Thank you to you. Thank you to your son.
And your mother.
For making the hobby a little bit more real and kind and nice and authentic. So,
and thank you. And thanks to both of you for spreading that gospel across the world. And it takes people like yourselves that are fully committed for it to become a truly global hobby. And I think we've made huge strides. And I think the growth of the hobby will come from countries like Germany and such that are small in scale to the United States, but have a lot of room to turn a lot of people into sports card collectors.
Yes. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Have later, a great guys. Day. All right.
Enjoy bye-bye. The sun.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah.
Bye. Bye.